buddy Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show. Tom, I'll tell you, it was a cool night. It was, some would say, darn right cold. And people had, you know, they cranked up the fireplace, got it ready, and it was ready to go. A lot of people had fires last night.
Well, up until last night, I've been getting by with a single blanket over my sheet.
Yeah.
Last night, I had to put a comforter on top of the blanket.
Yep. I am going to be putting the comforter on tonight. Thanks for reminding me. It's the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our friends over at Green Things tell me they've got 20,000 poinsettias ready for the holidays that they grow. It's a, you know, year-round deal over at Green Things, but 20,000 poinsettias ready to go, and folks may want those to decorate for the Thanksgiving table, which is coming up. It's Buckmaster on November 4th, 2022. Our radio station, 1030 KVOI, The Voice, for trusted news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening, which means you can live stream the program on my website, buckmastershow.com or kvoi.com. All of our telephone interviews, our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On Friday, we like to do our media partner shout-out, Dylan Smith and his team at TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, thanks for your efforts. Green Valley News and Sahorita Sun, Mary Glenn Hatcher is here representing Green Valley News. Mary Glenn, we appreciate the support from you guys. Thank you very much. Tucson Local Media Group, their portfolio includes Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, Pima County Administrator Jan Lesher, and joining me as I just introduced our guest co-host, Mary Glenn Hatcher, reporter, Green Valley News, and Sahorita Sun. Jan Lesher, Jan, how you doing?
Doing very well, thank you.
Did you put the comforter on the bed last night?
I did. I'm with you. It's a little bit harder to get out of bed in the morning these days.
It is, because it's dark.
It's dark and it's cold.
And then so cozy under the covers. We have the election now just a few days away. Well, is Pima County ready?
Pima County is ready, Bill, absolutely. We have, as I think you know, we have a new election director, a new deputy director this year, and we've added to that, adding the e-poll books and vote centers, but we have been blessed to have a terrific election director in Constance Hargrove. Jeremy's joined us from Louisiana, and we have an outstanding team. I was looking at the numbers Tuesday was the most recent numbers I've seen, and I can tell you that just about 23% of the people of Pima County have already sent in their ballots. So interesting to see that we're getting the turnout up. I believe, as we've shared with the community, we went through the first round of the new systems for the primary in August, and there were issues. There's 236,000 human beings voted. We're going to have an issue or two, but I think we tried to share with the public regularly what those challenges were and what we're doing to address them so that we don't have any problem again as we get into the general. But we're seeing good turnout. We're seeing a lot of interest. And so far, things have been moving very smoothly.
Yeah, my buddy Tim Steller wrote this morning, Jan, in the Star, that it's now up to 36% of registered voters in Pima County have now the ballots.
So
So I think it's 175 to 180,000 ballots are in. So,
and we were at 123 on Tuesday. So
that looks like really, really big turnout for this.
I think it's going to be. There's a lot of interest, obviously.
Mary Glenn, you were over there today. Mary Glenn Hatcher with us from the Green Valley News. You were at the election center.
Yeah, I was just there watching the ballot processing and tabulation process. Lots of people there, lots of activity. And, you know, the elections director was there as well, just walking people through what's happening. So lots of activity there. There's definitely people hard at work.
And just a reminder, Bill, if I may, I think we are live streaming that. There's video for that. So if people who are wondering what it looks like as people are counting ballots and bringing ballots in at the, you know, Pima.gov and our election site, people can just watch so that if they have any question about what's happening with what does it look like and where are the ballots going, easy to watch every single, every step of the way.
And the benefit of these voting centers is Jan Lesher?
You can vote anywhere.
Okay, and what that's an important point that we should talk about.
It really is. Thank you. That it used people used to have a precinct.
Yeah.
Pima County's gone from a high up around 400 and some odd precincts down to a little over 200 or so, and you had your precinct, and you mm-hmm. had to vote at your precinct. Now we have vote centers around the community, and you can go to any one of those. So whatever is might be if you're on your way home from work, and it's easier to swing by a vote center that's not necessarily next to your home, but closer to where you work, easy to do. All of the list of all the vote centers and what's available is on, again, the Pima County website, and just pima.gov, and you'll find the links to find out where your vote center might be. But that's the idea now with the poll books. You can get your ballot or register wherever you walk in, and you can go anywhere that is convenient.
Mary Glenn, do you think your area with some older folks, more traditional, wanting to vote on Election Day?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of people who will show up on Election Day at a vote center. Mm-hmm. Possibly a lot of people turning in those early ballots and dropping them off, you know, on Election Day. So we'll be looking for that. But I do think a lot of interest still is going to the polls, being there on Election Day. So we'll be watching that. But I do think we'll have a big turnout, yeah, in our area.
All right, Jen, you're in the news today. My friend Dylan Smith, Tucson Sentinel, reports that you've recommended that the Board of Supervisors cut the pay of constables in the coming years if the office, which is collectively run by independently elected constables, doesn't enact a series of change.
That's it. And I think what we're hoping to do is give the presiding constable some tools to use. One of the challenges we have is, as you point out, there are 10, at this point soon to be 9, independently elected constables. And in the past, we've had a presiding constable who wanted to develop a manual and some standard procedures, training standards, just so that we have consistency amongst the 10. And it really is up to the whim of those individuals, whether they choose to participate jointly or not. What I've recommended is that the constables voluntarily develop a manual that provides some policy direction for the group. If they don't, then we can look at their salary and have it cut in 2 years. So the first time we would have an opportunity really to lower it would be in 2024. So in my conversations with the presiding constable, this is all work that he's hoping that they can, he's hoping they get to anyway. I'm hoping that rather than just asking people to voluntarily or to come together or that we recommend they come together, that this gives a little bit of a you know, a carrot, if you will, or a stick to say, you got 2 years to try to get organized, and then maybe we can look at those salaries. That is one of three elements that will be considered by the board on the 15th bill. We're looking at what we might be able to do for the salaries in 2 years. We're also recommending the purchase of body cameras for all the constables, and that will be a recommendation on the board. And another, the third element is adding a couple of new positions that are deputy constables, so that these are completely certified, Arizona Post certified deputies, two available for the constables, so that if what has happened now, I should say, that if a constable is going out into a situation that he or she feels might be unsafe, they can partner up with another constable.
A little backup.
Yeah. So what we're doing now is adding deputy positions to that, so that a constable could take a deputy with him or her if they feel needed. So what I look at is that whole package. A couple of new deputies, body cameras and tasers, and then the ability for the, I hope, an incentive to get everyone at the table to develop standards and protocols.
Because right now, there is no uniformity of a uniform. People can pretty much wear what they want. If they're a constable, they can carry a firearm if they wish.
Correct.
I mean, this would put uniformity into this position, which, by the way, here in Pima County pays $67,000 annually. And if folks don't comply to what you're proposing, it would be kicked down to the state, I guess, mandated minimum would be just over $48,000 annually.
Correct. And those are salaries that are mandated by the legislature, the top and the bottom. And we are paying at the highest rate. And again, we hope, and as you mentioned, one of the challenges now, there's, as I understand, three constables really working every day out of the 10. We have one constable who hasn't come back to work in a couple months. And there is no...
In the wake of the tragic shooting?
Correct. And another one has been sick for a period of time. And so they are just not coming to work, but there's no docking their pay. These are elected officials. So generally the way you get their attention is whether they're reelected or not. And some of them, we have an individual not seeking reelection and so hasn't been there for a while. It's not as if we can then move that person out as administration and move another person in. So that's why we're looking at trying to address the situation from a variety of angles.
Mary Glenn, did you have something on the constables?
I was going to ask, yeah, there was some talk on the Board of Supervisors earlier about possibly even eliminating the office in its entirety. I didn't know if you had any updates on that front. Is that even possible for the county to do?
The county cannot unilaterally eliminate the positions. They're part of the Arizona Constitution and state legislature. What we're looking at is there a better way to do this? Could we work with the legislature and get, for example, consolidated precincts, if you will, so that maybe there's 10 constables elected, and some then they work in just different areas of the county. Currently, they serve a specific geographic area. That might be the right way to go. It might not. We're going to start seeing what can happen, but the elimination of the office isn't something that can be done. The only thing that we are doing to try to assist as well is we're hearing, as the numbers are down of the constables actually working, we're hearing from the realtors, for example. We're hearing from people in the community who rely on the constables to serve necessary papers to individuals. And so we have actually just been working through our procurement system to see if we can hire some private company just to get that section or that slice of the business done so that we're not slowing down the needs of the community.
Yeah, because this opens, if you've got three people that are working out of the 10 positions, there's a lot of papers, Jan Lesher, that are not being served.
They're eventually being served, but they're not being served in what I would think of in a timely way, Bill, at all. And that's why we're seeing, how do we get more people back? One thing I should point out, though, when I mentioned the three things we're doing, another thing is that on the 15th of November, the board will be selecting the replacement for Michael Stevenson, who did resign. So that will be another individual appointed. And on December 6th, the board will be voting to select the constable for another open seat of a resignation. Now, those two individuals will be in place. They won't actually get trained up until the first of the year, but at least they're individuals coming into the queue.
You know, in the wake of that tragic murder of the constable, Deborah Martinez, that really puts people who might be thinking, oh, this might be a great career, they've really got to think twice, some of these people, probably thinking about that.
Well, and Bill, I think that's why we've seen some not come back to work.
Yeah.
You know, they think they signed up for one job and the job is very different. And so we're looking at, what do we need to do? There is a critical need that they fill. There's services they provide. What is the better ways to do that, if there are better ways? How, again, do we get a deputy with a constable to get people out there to ensure safety? Do we make sure they're teamed up? Do we work with the local law enforcement, which usually is what happens, to get someone from the police department or the sheriff's department to go along? Or just what do we need to do to make sure that that need is filled?
Before we talk about Mona's Danish Bakery and Thanksgiving, which is now less than 3 weeks away, speaking of deputies, the police chief said yesterday the manpower in the city of Tucson, all-time low of deputies on the street. We had Chris Nanos, I think it was 3 weeks ago today. He said it's so hard now, not just city, but county. Anything in law enforcement, it's really hard to recruit.
That's what we are seeing, and that's what Sheriff Nanos has been talking about, that he may hire a great new class, and then by the time they even get out of training, they've lost numbers already. And it feels like for every time we hire one, you know, it's one step forward and two steps back. And I know that our sheriff is doing a great job out there trying to recruit and keep folks going. And what we're seeing, though, in this valley as well, is you've got, I think, you know, one community says we are going to pay police 5% more than anyone. We will be the highest in the valley. And then others try to match that. And I don't know how sustainable that is, because then we start just stealing amongst and between each other. But what does that look like? And much like the constables, you know, the an individual who might have gone into policing in the past to serve the community they grew up in, it's a different world out there. And we've got to really rethink how we are, how we're training our individuals and how we're giving them the tools they need to be safe.
And not just law enforcement. Pima County has tons of openings in just about every department, maybe every department. You would know that, Jan Lesher. I think there's a job fair. You've been doing them all over the valley. There's one tomorrow, I believe, up in the Catalina. But you're trying to get people to come to work.
Pima County's, well, there's two parts of it. We're like everybody else, I think, and it's hard to hire people right now. We've been running about 17% vacancy. So you're right. I look every Monday, department by department, and every now and then we'll have a small department that hits full. But it's not very often. And so we're seeing a lot of change. And it's also, I spent a lot of time talking to the other managers in communities around here, and that the movement into public sector, jobs in public sector is not, we're not seeing as we used to, but we're doing a lot of work at the county to restructure things a bit in that it's a new world in terms of hiring as well, and things that schedule alternative work schedules and yeah. or telecommuting, you know, mm-hmm. and some of those flexible kinds of things are so much more what we're hearing employees want now. My generation might have been looking at retirement benefits yeah, and yeah. healthcare costs mm-hmm. and things like that. Very different world in yeah. how we can recruit people.
Well, the world of Thanksgiving and what to have on your Thanksgiving table, thankfully, has not changed. People still want beautiful dinner rolls. They want their particular favorite pie. The place for all of that, put in your order now for Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Jan, what about Thanksgiving? What do you prefer as far as pie?
I'm a pecan pie gal, I got to tell you. Good, nice pecan pie. And as mm-hmm. long as it's Thanksgiving and you're giving in, maybe a little vanilla a la mode on that.
there you go. And Mary Glenn, what about you?
I'd have to say pumpkin. That's
You'd
just
go
classic
with pumpkin.
Tradition.
Yeah. And I like a nice dinner roll. What about you, Jen?
Bread and butter, I can't go wrong. You know, that's kind of bread and butter's good.
Well, Mona's Danish Bakery, taking orders now. Last year, Steve and the team at Mona's, I think they did 800 or 900 pies. Wow. It was a record year. And so this is the time, get your order in early. Mona's open right now. They're open for lunch, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. They open for breakfast, 6:30 Tuesday through Saturday. And on Sunday morning, they open the doors at 7. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. More with Mary Glenn Hatcher of the Green Valley News and Jan Lesher, Pima County Administrator, right after this. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things getting ready for the holidays. As I mentioned at the top of the show, they are ready with the poinsettias. They grew 20,000 in every imaginable color. They are ready for, as you, well, for your decorating as you get ready for the holidays. People, when people come over for Thanksgiving, they like that kind of hint of Christmas to be happening. So maybe a poinsettia would be a real nice way to get things kicked off for the holidays. Have that available on your beautiful Thanksgiving table. Jan Lesher is here, Pima County Administrator, who now has been official administrator. It's about a year. About a year.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Just about.
And Mary Glenn Hatcher is here from the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun. Mary Glenn, let's get into affordable housing.
Yeah. So Pima County is moving forward with a few initiatives to address economic inequality and affordable housing here with two of these task forces. And Jan, I'm just wondering if you can kind of tell us what are those committees going to be addressing and how did these issues kind of become a priority for the county to look at?
I think the prosperity or what we're looking at when the poverty is sort of the umbrella over everything. And then the other kind of issues we're looking at are critical issues right now, deal with affordable housing and then our street living homeless, which, again, subsets or reactions to poverty. We have, with the Prosperity Task Force that's looking at poverty, we have staff from the county and the city of Tucson initially at the table to start looking at all of our policies. You know, what is it we can do so that each recommends back to either the mayor and council or the board of supervisors where we're finding areas that we can address to deal with some of those issues. Some of it is, you know, people think if we're just paying more, well, that's an element. You know, but what do we need to be doing in workforce training and in education and in so many aspects that, to me, anything we're doing in economic development is simply to increase the per capita income of individuals in our communities, and that's the core of how we begin to address poverty. Not just are we providing services, but how do we help people come out of poverty? Is it transportation? Is it daycare? Is it education? So just at the beginning days of understanding how we can then ask each governing body to address their codes or rules to see how we can help with those economic issues. The next one, of course, is affordable housing. And so a couple of our board members have said, I'm not sure that even exists anymore. Yeah. That with interest rates and costs going up, we're seeing so much change. But I think what's critical to us is recognizing that we're seeing the issue across the valley. As we've talked about just a little bit ago,
it's not age specific.
It is not age specific. It is not geographic specific. We've chatted about issues in the Green Valley community where we have more and more issues of people on fixed incomes or maybe had two incomes, lost a spouse, were at one income. And what does that mean to availability of housing? So what do we need to be doing? And in some areas, it's a response of, well, let's let's just buy some apartment complexes and have them be offered in affordable housing. Not always as simple as that, again, as we're dealing with transportation and access to transportation corridors and the like. What are we doing as a county to balance things that we believe are important and amenities with affordability? If, for example, we think that a new structure should have access to electric vehicle charging stations, for example, anytime we put something on the table that we think is an important amenity we want to see included in any of our planning, we just have to be aware of what that does to the other side of the ledger, which is understanding how any additional costs can impact affordability. So where do those lines cross for us? You know, where increased responding to climate change and critical issues like that, how do they cross against affordability so that we make sure we're looking at a workforce or at a working group that will be addressing affordability that represents those who may be needing to access more affordable housing? What are barriers for them? And then looking at the home builder side of the units. If you own rental units and you own projects, what is it that's keeping you perhaps from making sure that you have a more affordable rent? So we're looking at putting all those pieces together and just in the preliminary days of creating the council, the workforce group or the working group that will begin to make recommendations to the board about addressing the issues.
It's not a giant leap to go from affordable housing to suddenly being homeless.
You know, it's not. And what we're looking at as well, Bill, is sort of the continuum of people who are homeless. I think of it as these days, one end of that spectrum are people who have just aged out of the foster care system, perhaps. The individual, as I mentioned, in Green Valley, a senior who just lost half their income, potentially. How are we finding those people that assistance they need for a short period of time while they find out what accommodations might be available? The other end of the spectrum is what we're seeing so much more activity in the community. I think the businesses and the folks concerned about and addressing that street living homeless population, some of which are there is criminal activity. Obviously, being homeless is not a criminal act in itself at all, but we're seeing people resorting to illegal behavior, and that's obviously impacting our businesses and the feeling of safety in the community. Just a little while ago, too, you've commented that TPD is at a record low.
Yes.
So if you have criminal activity going on and you are then losing the individuals who are enforcing some of that. So say that as county is beginning to look at how do we expand and enhance the facility that's providing pretrial or post-release services so that if people maybe don't have to go right into jail, how do we find a safe and humane place for those individuals to be housed or to have a home or right after they're released. We have at the jail right now, there's a couple of trailers that are providing those services. How do we make sure that that group isn't just forced to live on the streets for a period of time? And what is it we can do? The city has acquired some smaller hotels, motels. They've got, I believe, about 120, 150 rooms available. That takes a good chunk of folks off the street. What we're looking at is that need for that segment of the community. What we talk about is low barrier housing or housing first. There are other programs in the community that the high barrier piece, you can't have an animal. You may not be able to take a spouse or a partner. How do we accommodate all pieces of that? And how does this jigsaw puzzle fit together to see where we can best affect the safety of the community or have an impact to make it a more safe community?
We always hear that homeless population is growing. And do we have any evidence? Do we do a homeless population census?
Some have done that. I mean, there are organizations. I think back, if you remember, jeepers, now maybe 5 or 6 years ago, there was a group that began living in the downtown area in small houses on corners.
Right, I remember that.
And people went sort of person to person, and there was out trying to do inventory. And we are hearing numbers now in excess of 2,000. Mm-hmm. Those who work on the streets serving and working with that population believe that it is going up.
And then Pima County, the evictions, and this kind of goes back to the serving papers to our discussion about constables, but the evictions have been going up with the economy the way it is.
The evictions have been going up, and one of the things we're watching and concerned about, we have a very successful early eviction program to work with people who are being evicted to make sure that they have access to the program. And of course, this is one where kind of the everybody wins, because the money goes to the landlord. And so the person can stay, and the landlord is reimbursed as well. A concern that I have is that this has all been provided out of some pot of COVID-related money, whether it's ARPA or CARES money. And we're looking at a fairly significant cliff in March of next year, where those dollars just flat end.
Yeah, that was my next area to address. As the administrator, you've got to be a numbers person, and we're approaching the end of the calendar year, and I know Pima County operates on a fiscal year, July 1st to June 30th, but you'll be, I assume, knowing you, you're probably thinking about the next budget.
Oh, we started the budget in October.
Oh,
you're
okay.
Absolutely right, because we have to look at what I watch these days and just what you speak about. Two things. The county budget went from about roughly $1 billion, about $1.1 billion, to over $2 billion in a year.
What is the current county budget?
About $2.1 billion.
Okay, go ahead.
But that includes a very good chunk of federal money that mm-hmm. came in from our public health response and infrastructure dollars that everyone saw coming in from the CARES Act and the federal money coming in COVID-related.
Thus, the budget balloon, but a lot of it was Fed money. So go
absolutely ahead. Absolutely. You're right. Almost half in some ways.
So it takes us to the future.
And then what we're looking at, as I say, are those cliffs and the reality that there are many people today working for the county who were hired to work on those programs and those grants, and those are ending. And so what does that mean? I'm watching significantly increased costs, as everyone is, that we look at the our road plan, you know, in our consistent goal to get to, good, a rating of good or, you know, very good or better for 80% of our roads, the money that's going into that, and then our capital improvement projects that we have designated now. We can't do them all. I look at a project we had, for example, a Northwest Service Center that was to be pretrial and probation and community workforce development and the health department. The same dollars are going to provide for the health department. And we're going to have to add those other departments in sort of units that we tack on in the future, because the dollar is simply not going as far as it was just a short period of time ago. In addition, we use short-term certificates of participation to finance some of these projects. About a year ago, we went out to an issuance, and our money was costing about 1.5%. It's now between 4.5% and 5%. So the cost of money is going up significantly, which also impacts the projects that we can do. So
I got it from what I'm hearing. This is a revisionist budget.
It is
compared
revisionist
to what
budget.
You are looking at
right.
now, and you have the county has made that pledge to try to get these roads up to standard. What is your period? I know the city is
2030.
Talking.
Okay, 2030.
The city's mm-hmm. saying every road will be addressed in 10 years, and the county is saying 2030 we will have.
It's a very specific rating. It used to be a PACER rating. It's a different ruling, but somebody can go out and identify very, it's not subjective as much as it is an objective analysis of our roads. We went 80% at very good or better by 2030. And we have been on track to do that. And I think that the community is talking about, you know, fix the roads was the mantra for a long time. And I don't think we can lose sight of that while we try to do other things as well. But it is tough times ahead, I'm just telling you, in the next year or so, as we begin to look at what's happening with interest rates, the lack of the COVID money that was blessed for a period of time, but is going to be gone. And we just can't continue to fund programs that are no longer, for which we do not get those federal dollars.
Mary Glenn, a quick question for Jan before we say goodbye.
Yeah, I was going to ask, you guys are doing something different with the budget this year, which is bringing it forward to the board and asking for priorities and asking for ideas. Just your thoughts on that and how that's going so far.
Change is hard, and I think we're getting there, but our focus has been, just as you point out, Mary Glenn, that historically, the last day of April, the budget is released. There are two hearings in May and tentative adoption in June. Final after that. So the first time the board of supervisors really had significant input on what went into that budget was when they saw the budget, the draft budget. We are now asking for some direction early on. What does the board want to do in the next fiscal year? What is their, what are their goals? What are new programs, incentives? Do they want to see raises in or not? What's the tax rate look like? Because we've got to continue to provide, I think, significant transparency on what goes into that budget. And this is probably the most significant thing our board does to set policy for the entire for Pima County is determining what goes in the budget, and we are getting input from them earlier rather than later.
Okay, Jen Lesher, good to see you. Thanks,
Jen. Nice to see you both. Thank you.
All right, Mary Glenn Hatcher will stick around. The Truth, is it a fake newspaper? The paper in your mailbox isn't from the Catholic Church. Mary Glenn Hatcher has a really extensive piece in the Green Valley News about that, and we'll talk with her right after this.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Mary Glenn Hatcher of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun is with me in studio. Mary Glenn had a piece in the Green Valley News November the 1st talking about something called the Arizona Capital Tribune. This newspaper hitting local mailboxes recently, and my friend Tim Steller at the Star also wrote about this in the Star today. Mary Glenn, this is not a paper that's coming from the Catholic diocese.
No, it's not. And we got a lot of concerns from people who thought it was. And so kind of my article looked at kind of who these papers are really coming from. And it's what we found once we started digging into it was that it's part of this kind of larger network of local and business news organizations that are kind of posing as local news outlets, each with thousands of these algorithmically generated articles and a relatively small number of actually reported stories.
The byline, the person may not even be real.
Yeah.
Maybe a robot.
Yeah, a lot of the bylines, if
there's
you,
one yeah. particular byline that keeps coming up. What's that person?
Lori Lubert. Yeah, or Lubart. Yeah.
Is there a real Lori Lubert?
Yeah, definitely a question.
And there's also, I received a paper yesterday in the mailbox called the Grand Canyon Times. Mm-hmm. It's part of this same organization mm-hmm. that is doing this across the country.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so there's some research from the Tao Center for Digital Journalism at Columbia Journalism School mm-hmm. that's kind of dug into these papers. And there's at least 450, if not way more, that exist across the country. And yeah, they're largely these partisan propaganda kind of papers, and they masquerade as local news, and they just show up in people's mailboxes, and a lot of people just have questions about what they actually are.
Yeah, so the Columbia Journalism School, the Tao, T-O-W, Center of Digital Journalism, said there, as you point out, at least 450 mm-hmm. of these websites, similar to the Arizona Catholic Tribune. They span a network of local and business news organizations, each distributing thousands of these kind of computer-generated articles and a relatively small number of reported stories.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
you got to want. So what should we look for? There are a couple of questions that. And by the way, we should point out, to a smaller extent, the left has some of these as well.
Yes.
These
mm-hmm.
computer-generated papers. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the things? I mean, first of all, can you trust this? So we need to ask a few questions.
Yeah. So if you're thinking about kind of putting your critical thinking cap on when mm-hmm. you're looking at some of these
sure.
publications, a couple of good questions to ask is just what kind of content this is. So recognize what you're looking at. Is it supposed to be a news story or an opinion piece or an advertisement? A good thing to look for is just the name of the organization that's producing the content, not just the author, like a lot of these stories appear to be coming from people. But a closer look reveals that you can't really find them anywhere. So if you look at the organization who's producing it and consider looking at where their money comes from, that's a good place to start with when you're critically analyzing something like this.
Who and what are the sources cited, and why should I believe them?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. So as you read or listen or watch a piece of content, you can note who's being cited and what is being told to you about why the source is important or why the source is knowing what they're talking about.
The evidence and how it's vetted. I mean, the evidence is the proof that sources offer for what that they show and they testify. I mean, you have to identify the evidence.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and whether it's a document or an eyewitness account, just check how the author is verifying those sources and verifying that evidence that's being presented as fact.
And look for what might be missing.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can ask yourself maybe what you still don't understand about a subject after reading about it, was there information missing from the story? Were things explained clearly to you? And maybe doing a little bit of your own investigating after that.
So getting back to the content, are these stories based in any kind of fact?
A lot of them do report, let's say, real data, real numbers, but they're often out of context, and they're often not given with a lot of other viewpoints expressed. So a lot of the coverage is largely one-sided in a lot of these publications, and so it's just important to make sure that they're being checked and presented in a fair context.
Let's talk about the organization that is behind hundreds of these sites, the organization called Metric Media.
Yeah. So Metric Media and its affiliated websites, which include the Grand Canyon Times, who cited in some of the Arizona Catholic Tribune articles, they trace their origin to Brian Timponi, who's a former news anchor turned political spokesman. And a lot of exposés from other publications like the New York Times and the Columbia Journalism Review have accused Timponi's companies of plagiarism, publishing fake quotes, and using these algorithms, like we mentioned before, to generate articles that look like local news, but actually are coming from freelancers outside of the country sometimes.
Is that true? Well, the New York Times said that I believe that some of the freelancers were actually operating in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. You know, offshore freelancers mm-hmm. around the world doing mm-hmm. this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, your listeners and your readers probably were confused, some of them thinking maybe this was a special supplement from the Green Valley News.
Right. We did get questions about that. Yeah. So it's not from the Green Valley News. It's also not from the Catholic Church. No. We just want to put that out there. It's not from us. Yeah.
Good. Good information. Mary Glenn, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll take a break right here. We have Weekend Watch with Matt Russell right after this.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the DoubleTree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. I'm ready. It is Weekend Watch. When I hear that music, stir it up, I'm ready to stir it up and get into a weekend presented by our friends at Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It makes just such a great getaway, and it's not that far. I don't know, about 3-hour drive east of Tucson. You hit I-10, take a left at Lordsburg, and head up to Silver City, and this is a perfect time of year to partake in lots of outdoor activities. How about a visit to the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument? They've got a great website that details and articulates everything to do, and there's so many activities and great places to stay and eat. And speaking of eating, by the way, that website, southwestnewmexico.org, our guy who specializes in eating, food and beverage writer, Tucson foodie extraordinaire, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. You know, they say follow your nose wherever you're going. I always follow my stomach. That's always a good guide to all the great, delicious things in Tucson. But you say that music signals the start of the weekend. Did you ever have weeks, Bill, where Tuesday starts the weekend or Wednesday starts the weekend? So we're finally here. We made it.
I think the weekend for you began with all the Halloween candy on Monday night.
You know, one thing that I do miss, though, is raiding my kids' trick-or-treat bags. No, they're grown and they've moved out of state now, but I used to grab the Reese's with great care. You know, before they had a chance to even take their costumes off, Dad did his best in raiding their pillowcases. I do miss those times.
Yeah, back in the day when they offered full-size candy bars. Anyway, it's not Tucson if there's not a festival on a weekend, and we've got them.
So we got a big one here. As part of the sort of preservation and celebration of the customs and traditions of all Celtic people, Bill, the Tucson Celtic Festival is happening this weekend at Rialto Raceway Park with Celtic arts and music, dance, literature, and of course, food, surprise, surprise, along with demonstrations and reenactments. It's happening all weekend long. Now, there's also going to be traditional Scottish games. There's going to be a Viking beard contest. They're actually going to be conducting Viking-style weddings. And so when you throw in some Celtic rock music and all of that, it doesn't matter if you have Scottish or Irish or Welsh or British blood. You're going to have a blast at this event. Go to TucsonCelticFestival.org for all the information and a complete calendar of the weekend's lineup.
Hey, I've already got a bad shoulder. I don't know how much of the timber I'll be throwing.
Yeah, Jim. Yeah, you need to phone a friend to help you with that one, Bill.
Hey, I love fish. Anything on the weekend for fish lovers?
Yeah, do I absolutely have something for you. You know, I've been writing for Tucson Foodie for some time now, and Tucson Foodie has just announced the start of a new series called Tucson Foodie Presents, where they partner with local restaurants on some pretty, amazing culinary experiences. And the first one is happening tomorrow night, Tucson Foodie Presents, where they're going to be partnering with Downtown's Obon on really a gastronomic gala of sorts that's going to celebrate the beautiful bluefin tuna. So, Bill, this is a multi-course dinner. It begins at 6 o'clock. Now, you're going to want to get there early by about 5:30 because guests are going to be greeted with a welcome cocktail. They're going to pour that cocktail down an ice luge. This is going to be paired with a tuna tartare appetizer. And then the fun really gets going when the chef is going to preside, talking about ocean sustainability, answering questions, and then he is going to break down in real time a huge bluefin tuna right before your eyes. You're going to eat that very same tuna served 6 different ways throughout the evening. Each course is going to be paired with a different sake. So all of this information, all of the lineup of the events in each of the courses, all available at TucsonFoodie.com. And as of about 10 minutes ago, I think there were 4 seats left for this dinner. So TucsonFoodie.com, you don't want to miss out if you love tuna.
Well, those 4 opportunities will go very fast. So get in on it right now.
All right.
Thank you so much. And, of course, Dia de los Muertos, the big parade, is Sunday night, right?
Absolutely. It's just that annual celebration of life.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Stay safe. Thanks. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. Original theme music composed by Chris Stefan. Thanks to Rose Brandt and everybody here at KVOI, including engineer and producer Tom Fairbanks, the entire team at Bustos Media Tucson. My wish, be well, everybody, stay safe, and have a lovely weekend.